is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Weekend edition of the Lombardi Line underway from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studios. I'm Ben Wilson, in for Femi. Femi in Oxnard, California right now. Mike Paul,
Femi finds something to do every Saturday. Two more weeks you're here again, I think, for Femi, as Stephanie schedules out the rest of the year.
Yes.
It's amazing, this guy.
Femi, noted Cowboy supporter. It's a rough time right now for the Cowboy fans. He's got to check out Jerry in person, apparently. And accost him for the lack of deals that are being done so far. There was the quote yesterday as we start the show from Cowboy Camp, Dak Prescott saying, "The money is out there." Yes, Dak, the money does exist. It's just a matter of when it will come and how it will be allocated. Is CeeDee Lamb still not at the training camp? Micah Parsons dealing with bangs and bruises and nicks on so far through camp. And Dak Prescott yet to get his contract as well.
He won't. He's not getting anything. He controls it. I mean, it's all in his court. I would be shocked if there's a deal done unless they're going to pay him $300.
We did a no deal, or I should say a no way or no doubt. Should be deal or no deal with Michael.
That's a classic Lombardi segment.
That is a classic Lombardi segment. And the question posed to Michael a couple days ago was no way or no doubt two of the three, the trio we just mentioned to Cowboys, will sign before the start of the regular season. And he's like, there's no way. It's not happening. Probably one, but certainly not two. Is that a sentiment you share?
I agree 100%.
Hard to see with the way things have played out so far in Cowboy camp, how that will all play out. Other news of the day on the NFL before we dive into some Olympic breakdown. There's a lot of great Olympic stuff going on as we speak, as well as Major League Baseball. Big story in the world of MLB last night. Interesting story.
I thought, too, the first 5-under in Pittsburgh. I thought that was the headline you were leading
with. Yeah, that was the headline I was hoping to lead with. But alas, didn't quite get there. Same for the Dodger bullpen last night. But at least on the NFL front, that the Vikings are – that Justin Jefferson openly admits he's like, I'm worried about my – hamstring being re-injured, which you're talking about one of the premier players in the league. It's a guy who you figure will have to have a massive role this year with projected subpar quarterback play, whether it's Sam Darnold or J.J. McCarthy in Minnesota. And the Vikings, they've been holding out Jefferson here and there in practice. And is it just a classic camp story, Mike, or is it a sort of a frightening sign, at least, when a guy's openly saying, yeah, I'm worried about this hamstring, that we've seen those soft tissue injuries tend to pop up and be repeated for top wideouts, especially.
I think if you'd asked Mike Pritchard, he would say this, that it's just something they don't talk about openly, but guys, of course, are concerned about, especially receivers, their legs and injuries to their legs, and you're trying to play through all that, but, you know, obviously your career hangs in the balance on any one play. I don't think it's a big deal.
The big worry, you would say, for Jefferson, it's not that. It's that he turns into Larry Fitzgerald a la the John Skelton years. I mean, that's really the concern, right? You're just this generational talent. You just cannot get the football because of bad quarterback play. I don't think Darnold will be that bad.
Is Darnold that bad?
No. But that's what some people would lead you to believe. I mean, the Vikings are getting no respect whatsoever. Like, they're by far the fourth favorite in the NFC North, and I don't really understand that.
Yeah, they're a well-coached team on that, to the counter-argument on that. But they are getting overshadowed with all the Bears love, and the division is, I think it's a pretty well established fact that two of the three best teams in the NFC reside in the NFC North. So, I understand some of that bias, but there's a lot of, if Darnold shows any signs of what he did in San Francisco in that short window with that kind of offensive talent and that coaching and that head coach, they're going to be all right.
What does Darnold need more than anything to have success? It's a good offensive line to keep him upright. You prevent the seeing of the ghosts, which has plagued Mr. Darnold in the past. Vikings have a solid O-line. It's a top 10 unit. One of the highest paid left tackles in the league, and Christian Darrisaw saying it right now. Vikings, a team that will be a little undervalued heading into the start of 2024. As far as other news and notes around the sports world, Mike, we start with Blake Snell, because that was something special last night. I didn't bet him, and of course he goes out.
We had a strange scheduling day yesterday here at Circa in that we had meetings at noon, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Really?
Now, some of them were 15-minute meetings, so I was kind of back and forth here. I texted Derek. I said, Snell's got a no-no through 4. I would never usually text that early, but they weren't even making solid contact on him last night. Now, This being said about him throwing the no-hitter, do you know he'd never pitched in a ninth inning before last night? He had never pitched in the ninth inning of a game before last night. So I was going to kind of bust Mitch's balls a little bit and say, is this the beginning of his Cy Young run? Obviously, he was horrible early last year, and then Mitch cashed a big ticket on him a little bit facetiously. But obviously, you know, if he can do anything like he finished down the stretch last year, maybe San Francisco now sticks their nose into this wild race for National League wild card right now. I mean, like, there's, what, three teams out of it? I mean, it is so intriguing, and that you can keep fan bases involved till late September with the way they structured the baseball playoffs. I think it's terrific.
Especially in the NL this year, where this was probably what the perfect elixir for what Rob Manfred and the powers that be in Major League Baseball wanted to see, where there's really not been a single team. Really, it seems like every week, right? Like, Arizona has been the hot team most recently. They've surged to take the second wild card spot. You've had stretches where the Cardinals have looked lights out. The Mets, for obviously an entire month, they had the best record in baseball from, you know, May through the majority of July. Pittsburgh has had good stretches. And the Giants, to your point, I mean, not out of it whatsoever. Four back of the Mets and Padres, who occupy the final wild card spots as it stands. It kind of, it feels like a situation, too, where anytime you have one of these teams that starts getting, you know, good minus money to make the playoffs, you sort of feel like you're paying into that tax so heavily because of the competition around them. All it takes is one bad series, and like in the case of the Padres, whose odds have shifted wildly here, Mike, over the last couple of weeks, one bad series and you're on the outside looking in again.
Well, bad loss last night against Gomber, right? Yeah. I mean, that, I know you're throwing Vasquez, so you're not, would they end up being a $1.65 favorite? But you get the lead in that game, and you bring up that reliever came in the sixth. I don't know, what did he get, one out of four batters, and the game blew up, and Colorado took care of business. The bullpen was good. They got to win the last two games of that series. If you're a Dodger fan, I think you have to be concerned about even winning the NL West. I watched that entire game last night, Ben, and I know you had the Dodgers.
I did.
Boy, it's hard to see this team being capable of winning multiple playoff series. I know Oakland's played better, but boy, you jump out to a 2-0 lead early there on Estes, and you beat 6-2, a late home run, three-run homer, very late, two outs in the ninth by Ohtani makes it look more respectable. But they were dominated in that game from the second to the ninth inning.
Yeah, you're sitting there early, you're like, nice little $3 in-game favorite. You're like, this will be a coast shop. So it's funny you bring that up, because the Dodgers, having lost three straight, D-backs on a heater. They've won four straight, wonders of 8-10. Dodgers updated the odds, still -650 to win the division. And as much as I have been in the camp of the 30-40 cent line moves have gone a little too far, fading LA, and I've looked to buy low in a couple spots for the Dodgers. Sometimes it works, sometimes, like last night, it hasn't. At the same time, you can't deny what in general is happening with LA, which is that there's no reliability for the most part outside of a couple pitchers on the rotation. And the lineup after about hitter number five does not inspire any sort of fear.
I mean, obviously they missed Betts. Betts was the co-favorite for MVP. He gets hurt. Now that moves everybody up one. And as you say, the depth gets cut by one full spot, and you're getting a top five player in the game of baseball. I think it's interesting to look at both the Diamondbacks and the Padres. I have a little more upside. Diamondbacks are playing very, very well right now. Remember, they weren't over 500 until two games before the All-Star break was the first time they were over 500 all year. They are your reigning National League champions.
They are.
By the way, people forget that. I think there's a little more upside to the Padres because of getting Musgrove and Darvish back. We keep saying that, but you know, you'll have them down the stretch, hopefully for the last 6 weeks of the year. I think it's interesting to take a shot at the Padres at 9-1 to win the division.
If you take out the AL East, AL West, where you have the two teams tied at the top of the division, no other division is tighter right now than the NL West from team 1-2. Most people, I mean, if you look at the odds, you would just assume, oh yeah, Dodgers 9-10 game lead. This is a coast job. And it was 9 or 10 games as recently as about a week ago, but that's the state of the Dodgers in the NL West right now.
Talk about a team leaking oil. How about the Phillies?
Oh yeah, Phillies down to, I mean, you know, the Braves have won won four straight. That's now a five game edge. Yeah. I mean,
and you're throwing Orion Kirkery. I mean, you're going to Seattle and throwing a bunch of relief guys as starting pitchers. Couldn't score last night till the ninth inning. They're. I keep waiting for them to wake up out of the funk. And meanwhile, the Braves, injury after injury after injury, only five
and
back.
And they're just hanging in there. Plus 245 on Atlanta, who were the overwhelming preseason favorites. And there are a lot of people who said back in the preseason, if there's like a single best bet to make, it's okay, Atlanta's going to win the division. They're so stacked. But you think about, you know, all the injuries, pitching, hitting, and they've still, I was super impressed this week watching them take two or three in a series against Milwaukee, where the Braves just find ways to manufacture the runs when they have to. Pretty solid bullpen. They finally get they finally gotten some more consistency with some of their young arms. And it's just a matter of, okay, it's a war of attrition. I mean, that's why it's 162 games and why the betting markets, the fluctuation. I mean, you can, with timing, that's everything, Mike, as you always talk about. You can tackle this stuff really well.
Yeah. I know we ran out of time in this segment, but I'd love to talk about this NFL top 10 list.
We will. I think we will.
At some point later in the show.
I think we'll hit this on the other side because the top 100 players, NFL does this, NFL 100 has been revealed. We will discuss our thoughts, the top 10, and these are player-voted things. And
which players? The WNBA? This is an incredible list.
I don't know which player. You know, it cracks me up, the reveal, how they do that as well. Okay, so Olympic stuff we're following today. U.S. Women's National Team, they're just underway against Japan. Nil-nil there in the second half. You have under 2.5, correct? Feel pretty good there.
Yeah, I feel pretty good. Well, a little bit about what you said of the fear of Japan scoring. You know, I thought about U.S. to win to nil, but I just went under 2.5.
Yeah, I saw the Japanese women's team in person a few years ago, and really good defense, struggle in general, though, in the final third. U.S. and Japan, 0-0 as they start the second half. That's a quarterfinal there. We've also got a lot of other action. The third round of the golf is live right now, leaders on the back nine. And we have the gold medal match for the women's tennis about to get underway. Donna Vekic and Quinn Wenjian. Get some quick thoughts on that. Also talk USA Puerto Rico men's basketball. Tip off in about an hour and some thoughts on that top 10 list as voted on by the NFL players next. Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. And our Michael Lombardi's featured in today's newsletter, Mike Baum, with burning questions for every single AFC team. That is a part of the newsletter. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. Michael back tomorrow. Mike Baum, VP of Operations for Circa, the Golden Gate and the D with me here. I'm Ben in for Femi, who's out at Oxnard, California, staying cool. He's one of the few fans at Cowboy Camp. I don't know if you saw that picture the other day that was floating around.
I did not.
It was basically a shot. I think Mike Leslie, WFAA, covers the Cowboys. There was like 8 people in the stands.
Could you identify Femi? Did you see him?
Well, this was before Femi went out.
Oh, okay.
That's what precipitated this road trip for Femi. I checked in with him before he left. He's ready to go. Had the NFL scout sunglasses, the hat. The khaki shorts, which you're required to have.
That's good. I know he doesn't bet on Cowboys games, so I hope this gives him a lot of joy, whatever he can learn there.
100%. Okay. Our producer, Brian Ortega, is with us today as well. Does an outstanding job whenever we're with him. Is coming up with some top headlines here throughout the week. If anything you missed, and we're trying to decide, are these front page or back page headlines? Do they matter, or do we just kind of ignore them because it is training camp time? Let's start with Justin Herbert, which was really the news of the week here. Hurtin' Herbert. Also, Mike, you have the autonomy here to potentially change any of these headlines if you'd like a rewrite here. Hurtin' Herbert, after he was diagnosed with plantar fascia in his right foot, expected to miss the preseason, but the reports, at least early, is that Herbert will not miss any time in the regular season. Mm-hmm. That, to me, has to be front-page news when you think about how hyped the Chargers are with the expectations that Jim Harbaugh will come in and immediately reverse the fortunes this year.
No, I say it's back-page news, Ben. He wasn't going to play anyhow. Nobody plays in the preseason. It's a complete joke. If he's ready for week one, what did he miss? Some time in practice? He got to learn Harbaugh's new offense? He's still there. It's not as if his mind is hurt and he can't digest what's going on. I say this is a non-issue, Ben Wilson.
Non-issue for Mike Pump.
Non-issue.
And I respect if you're, like, if it's preseason.
Moved their week one line a half point.
Half point
off this news because there is some possibility, right? Obviously, what was the chance he wasn't going to start week one? Less than 1%. And now what is it? Maybe 15-20%?
Yeah, sure.
So I there was a half point move.
To me, simply because it is year one. If Harbaugh had already been there, but there's so much newness. And it's more to me that the roster is still a ways away from competing for a playoff berth. Set aside Herbert here, who is the obvious strength of the Chargers roster. A lot of work now for Jim Harbaugh to do, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Now you're adding in your quarterback out all preseason. The other big NFL piece that we saw over the week, it was the Hall of Fame game on Thursday, the new kickoff rules. Can I kick it? Is this front page or back page news after we saw the first glimpse of the new kickoff rule? Brian said it in, you know, the little sub quote here that was met with mostly negative reactions. I don't know. I don't know about negative, but it was probably interesting more than anything else. People were like, what am I watching? This is weird.
Well, were there great positive reactions?
No.
So,
but
I mean, I'm just defending how he wrote it. How he wrote it, I think, is accurate. It was met with blah, kind of a, it looks ugly and it didn't produce anything. More results oriented, right?
The longest return went out to like 31. Yeah.
I think it's silly.
I think we'll realize this will be an irrelevant rule change.
I think they should just get the ball on the 25 once you score. They want to take these high speed contacts out of the game. Just take it out. Okay? Just take it out. You still have some of it in the punt return game where you're going to get some entertainment out of it. Just the team starts at the 25 after the other team, unless they're going to, and then they have to declare an onside and all that. I do like the change that you can challenge the play clock, though. I think that's absolutely a good rule and should lead to totals in general being lower because the defense has the option to always, they're not going to challenge a bad offensive play. But if the clock's down and there was a big offensive play, you get a 5-yard penalty
instead
of.
That's such a good point. To me, the front page
and the extra challenge.
Yes, to me, the front page news is the fact that the NFL finally, in a league like this that has so much money and theoretically should have a lot of extremely intelligent people running the rules, yet it doesn't normally happen that way. How were they not allowing, how were they penalizing teams? Let's say you lose a challenge in the past. Well, now if a ref makes a massive mistake, say there's a ball that clearly short hops on the field and you're forced to burn a challenge. Well, now you don't get an extra challenge because of that. Now that rule has been changed where you do get a third challenge even if you were to lose the first
two. I think you should have as many challenges until you make a mistake,
yes.
Ben.
Yes, I agree.
Until you challenge one that you're wrong on.
Why penalize the coaches
for referee
incompetence?
The ref makes six mistakes. Should be able to correct them all?
I agree.
That'd be like saying there's a maximum of 3 VARs in a game.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I don't know.
Although there's a big push to eliminate VAR.
Yeah, VAR. That's quite the polarizing concept right now. Still 0-0 between the U.S. women's national team and Japan, by the way. 63rd minute there in the Olympic women's quarterfinal. Yes, we are in agreement that the front page news different than the actual kickoffs going on. Let's go to some baseball here. The news of the week from an injury perspective. Mike Trout was going through rehab. His rehab shut down. Fishing season for the Trout. I like that headline, Brian. That's really good. Another setback from a meniscus tear for Mike Trout, was scratched late from the AAA Salt Lake Bees lineup earlier in the week. Then they announced he is done. Front page news or back page news? I have this on the back page because Trout and the Angels are already irrelevant, unfortunately, and this does not do much to change that.
It is back page news, but it's significant in really a encapsulation of a career wasted, right? One of the
such a shame,
most talented players, and Angels were never able to put together a competitive team, injury after injury after injury. By the way, we did the math on this. He made $344,000 per plate appearance this year.
Oh,
that's all.
That is all. That would be the front page headline if we were doing it that way. Feel bad for Trout. Yes, the situation he has been in. Certainly making quite a few bucks to compensate for that. Our last one, front page or back page news here as we get things started on the Saturday morning edition of the Lombardi Line. Venue Sports, a streaming service geared toward sports fans, will debut this fall for $42.99. Hot new venue is the headline. Last time I checked, Mike, with cable, which is maybe like, twice the cost of this, you get like a kajillion channels. But with this, you get ESPN, Warner Brothers, Discovery, and Fox content for $42.99 a month.
Cable is ridiculous. I would say it's not double that cost. I mean, and I get internet with it as well. I get it.
Yeah,
but it's outrageous.
I'm not a cable guy either. I'm just saying.
There's people that go back and forth every 2 years with DirecTV and Cox here because just to try to get a deal because it's such a runaway, a runaway price. I mean, $42.99 seems a bit exorbitant. Because I know you piecemeal together different things, but I mean, ESPN Plus, I couldn't do without.
Same.
I love Paramount, and those are the two that I really rely on. I don't know for an additional $20-something a month what else I'm going to get here.
Yeah,
I need
Peacock for me for the Premier League.
I protest Peacock.
But, I mean, look, I'm
I
not
protest
a fan
it.
Either.
I protest.
The point
it.
Is, you start adding this stuff up, and it's you know well over $100 a month. So.
Yeah.
That's well, the sad state of affairs. Like I'm a streaming guy too. I'm not a cable guy yet. I look at this and I'm like, this is just ridiculous. So, as a consumer, I don't know, just come to Circa every day. Just hang out here.
Well, we have access to everything. That's the good thing. Much more than I could get at home.
I know. We talk about that. We talk about that all the time. Yeah. I don't know. We'll have another Peacock. Multiple Peacock games in the NFL this year, starting week one. So get ready for your protest.
Put playoff games on there.
Some NFL, the top 100. We teased that here in our first segment. The top 100 revealed last night. Mike Palm has some pressing thoughts on this. Top 10. We've got the list here. Again, these are voted on by the NFL players. So just an interesting insight into who the players view are the top players. Tyreek Hill, best player in the NFL. Number one, Lamar Jackson, Christian McCaffrey, Patrick Mahomes, Myles Garrett round out the top five. And you get Chris Jones, Trent Williams. Will this voting impact Trent Williams' holdout and a potential contract? He gets TJ Watt, Travis Kelce, Max Crosby round out your list, Mike.
Patrick Mahomes is fourth? How is that possible?
I do not
know. I could buy the Tyreek Hill argument and with Mahomes second. I could actually buy that.
Because those guys they have an appreciation for the speed in person of Hill.
Remember, as he says, he's the only guy that you change here, as Michael says, you change your whole game plan in the NFL as an offensive player. But how do you put Lamar Jackson over Mahomes?
Yeah, and I'm as much of a Lamar, pounding the drum for
as anybody.
Say,
is it a popularity contest? Is he a more popular player than Patrick Mahomes? Maybe the brother weighs against Mahomes.
Maybe the brother.
Maybe they don't care for the brother, but I mean, Lamar Jackson is a real, you could teach classes at a university on this guy. I mean, and they still don't know what's wrong with him. They've got to be running every medical test in the world to figure out what is wrong with Lamar Jackson.
Could it just be like, what was that Miles Austin preseason when he's like, the hamstring just won't work. And then everybody was saying, well, he just didn't want to be in camp. But the thing with Lamar Jackson is, as much as you would be tempted to say that, he's had this pop up in the regular season time and again. This is these kind of mysterious illnesses where Jackson has missed now about a half dozen practices, or even, he's even missed a game with this if you go back to the COVID season as a result of illness.
Who's your biggest surprise that's in the top 10, that the person is in the top, not where they're ranked, but that they're in the top 10?
No doubt. Crosby's the easy one to say cracking the top 10. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand it, but I'm a little bit surprised on that.
I am too. I think he's borderline 20. Top 20.
Max Crosby. Rounds out your top 10. The NFL vote of the players. When we come back, Major League Baseball full card tonight. We'll also get some thoughts on the Olympic action that is about to get underway shortly here on the Lombardi Line. Underway on our Saturday edition of the Lombardi Line, back from downtown Las Vegas, Circus Sportsbook Studios. I'm Ben Wilson. He's Mike Palm. And Mike, Olympic action. This is a big weekend in the games across the pond in France, where we're in the 73rd minute. U.S. Women's National Team and Japan tied 0-0 there as they compete in the quarterfinals now into the knockout stage. We are a few minutes away here from the gold medal match of the women's tennis. A women's tennis tournament at Roland Garros, Mike, that has had upsets up and down the board. Iga Świątek, the heavy favorite, who has been the queen of clay the last couple of years. She does not win. She does take bronze yesterday, but the player who she was upset by, Qinwen Zhang, now, it's always that classic bump, right? If you beat a Świątek on clay, you're going to get a massive bump odds-wise. To me, it's a little bit aggressive, though, on Zhang, who's a really good player. But Donna Vekic has been as hot as anybody on tour. This is the classic. If you're looking to actually play this, Mike, you go Vekic pregame, look for an in-game opportunity with an early break, because Vekic on serve has been tremendous. And it's Donna Vekic of Croatia against the woman from China.
What's the price, Ben?
Seeing right now the updated price, and they are about to get underway in a few minutes there, Zhang minus 250. You can get Vekic actually as high as plus 220 in the market.
What did she do at the French Open this year? I'm trying to remember Vekic.
So Vekic is...
Like clay would not be a surface I would associate her game
you,
with.
No, you would...
Right?
A power player. Well, you and she, Donna Vekic is the one. She had the deep run at Wimbledon this year because of the power on grass. But it's funny. Vekic has had decent success at the French Open. She's made it as far as the fourth round so far. Was just pulling up this year at the French Open. Vekic was in round three. So, like, she's a little bit more success on clay. No matter the draw, you don't get to this point without clearly being able to change your game. And Vekic, it's more than anything, a player who's just on a heater right now. And you have to respect that. We've also seen on the clay, too, breaks of serve happen much, much more often. We even saw it on the men's side, where yesterday Novak Djokovic and Lorenzo Musetti in a men's semifinal, first four games of the second set were all breaks. Especially with the way the in-game algorithm adjusts things so aggressively, we've talked about this separately before, Mike, but we're of the belief that, especially in the women's game, best two or three, and that's no different here in the Olympics, that you can get some value with the algorithms overrating the value of a break. And Vekic is very likely to find breaks to serve today against Quinn Win Zhang, even if she doesn't end up winning the match here.
Plus 3.5 games, would that interest you?
The issue, like, I could easily see, you know, a 4-4, 4-5. And that's because four is really the key number when you're betting, you know, the handicap game. So I'd rather just take the bigger price on the outright and expect this. Or you look total games over, expect this to go three sets.
What is Vekic to get swept? What's the price?
The 2-0 on. Yeah. That is a good question. Well, pull that up. You would think based on the general match price, you're looking at probably you're probably looking at even money range. Minus 105.
Yeah. I thought if it was a plus price, you could play both ways and try to middle it, right?
Yeah, you could.
She can get to a break in one of the sets, tiebreaker.
Minus 105. Anyhow. Yeah, -105 there.
Not. All right. It's just a thought.
Ah, alas. 10.5 games is the total player total for Vekic, 12.5 there for Zhang. We also have the U.S. men's basketball team. It's the final group stage match taking on Puerto Rico. U.S., though, they narrowly cover game one against Serbia, is about a 14.5-point favorite, able to pull away late to cover that one. And then we're never close to covering is 30-point favorites. I think that closed, 29 at Circa? A lot of respected 29. Action coming in on South Sudan in game number two. The team South Sudan beat to get their first ever Olympic win. Puerto Rico now, just playing out the string here, and it is a situation where we're seeing money come in on the U.S. 35-point opener on the spread, now up to 36 at most shops. With spreads this high, though, Mike, how much action have you been seeing purely on side when there are now a lot of different ways you can bet? You can bet props, you can bet obviously the points, rebounds, assists. You can also bet which player will lead the team in points or which player will be tournament MVP. I just wonder with how high these spreads have been, how much action you're actually getting there on U.S. sides.
Not much. Not much. You see more action on the dogs when the spread's this high. But like I said, when I'm talking about the overall handle of the sports, men's basketball is third. It might be fourth now once this golf gets done with what action we'll take on the golf. But clearly tennis is number one, soccer's been number two, and then basketball. Right. Now, if you go to handle per game, once you get into the elimination rounds, it obviously will increase. But so far, nothing to write home about. Like, there's such, you know, interest in the USA, mainly because of the overwhelming favoritism.
We have seen some money come in over the last day since we last talked about this, Mike, on the Friday Lombardi Line show. LeBron now, he was even money to win
what
the
is he
tournament
now,
MVP.
Minus $3 after your speech yesterday?
No, well, hey, I thought it should have been like minus 150. It's minus 115 now. So LeBron, who's second to Kevin Durant on the points list so far, one behind AD in rebounds, and he has led the team in assists, minus 115. With U.S. being minus 600, to me, that's still worth a bet, even right now, even as the money comes in on James. And how much will that change after today? Because it's Puerto Rico, because it's a 35-point spread, I wouldn't think a ton with how the minutes have been dispersed pretty evenly in these mismatches. But at least James, to me, unquestionably, once we get to the knockout rounds, the team will run through him on that. That's our Olympic update for now. Anything you had on the track for today? You've been very, very dialed in there on the track.
No, I didn't bet any of the men's 100 elimination heats, but it was upset after upset. And you have to understand at this point, top three qualify and to the semis, and then top three other than the best times other than those auto qualifiers through. So, I mean, I know you say, well, he was controlled or he eased up and got second or didn't. And how much do you really save in the last 20 meters or whatever? But it's very clear they're looking around just to make sure they're the top three. They're not getting bonus points. It's not a cumulative three race total of time. So you're just trying to survive in advance in these things. So the pricing on these, I saw three different men that were minus 2,000 or better. Or worse, you could say odds did not win their heats the heats this morning.
Great
so
angle to look
I did
at
bet
going
some
forward.
Of the women. I didn't bet the men's this morning.
Only other update too: the men's golf late in round three right now. What an awesome leaderboard it has been here. Xander Schauffele 14 under par. He's on the 15th hole. He is your in play favorite at plus 115 over Spaniard Jon Rahm, who's at 13 under par, tied with Tommy Fleetwood of Team GB, 13 under as well. And then Hideki Matsuyama, Nikolai Højgaard rounding out the top five there at 11 under par. Rory McIlroy, Scotty Scheffler, though, knocking on the door each at 10 under par, tied for sixth. The course has gotten a ton of water. It's a very penal course off the tee, but if you're hitting fairways, Mike, there's no reason you can't go low here at Le Golf National there just outside Paris. And it has been today really perfect conditions, and we've seen some unbelievably low scores. Højgaard, the low score in the clubhouse at 62 there today.
It's terrific. You couldn't have asked for a better leaderboard if you were planning this tournament for the Olympic Committee and the golf. And it looks like I've never really seen that course. Have you seen that? It's where they play the French Open of golf.
The Ryder Cup in 2018. Yeah. And, you know, which is, there's been some minor changes to the course then. But, yeah, it's been the tournament has played out very, very well, even in a limited field. But the cream of the crop really has risen here with how Le Golf National has played out there. As far as Major League Baseball for today, we'll transition there, Mike. We've got a couple of guys. You think about players making debuts. We saw a couple of them last night. Frankie Montas, pretty solid. He wasn't overwhelmingly great, really great for the Brewers in his first start with Milwaukee, but Brewers get an 8-3 win. We did see the Cardinals also get a debutant for them. Post-deadline Eric Fetty was not all that sharp as the Cardinals lose again to the lifeless Cubs at Wrigley Field. Suddenly a little more life there for the Craig Council-led Cubbies here.
Narrows tried to make it interesting in the eighth, but the Council's got to be furious. They've won two in a row against their rival.
Craig Council's like, what is going on here? What do you expect for Jack Flaherty tonight, though? That's really the big name now post-deadline. Flaherty goes in Oakland at the Coliseum for a Dodger team really scuffling right now. And we're seeing, again, market coming in on the A's. It's down to Dodgers open minus 180 a lot of places, down to minus 165, 170 as well for Flaherty now in Dodger blue.
He seems very cheap again. For Flaherty in this spot. I thought the interesting game, if you talk about the early start, with the earliest game being the Yankees, why is Berrios such a huge dog? Plus 170 on the Jays?
Rodon's been horrible for the Yankees.
I found that. I might take a shot with the Blue Jays this morning. I just thought that I thought he'd be maybe plus 130, 135. Yankees lose last night. Gausman beats them, and Torres gets benched for staring at a line drive that hit the base of the wall, not getting a double out of it, and then getting thrown out at home on the subsequent double and costing them a run. He gets pulled. I believe that was the third. I believe he gets pulled going into the fifth. And I heard Michael Kay and O'Neill talking about, well, why didn't he pull him in the third? Well, he got tagged out at home and went right to his position. It would have been Boone would have had to really make a big scene sending somebody out to take him out. Instead, just informed him after the bottom of the fourth, you're not going back out there. And he's indefensible, right? Well, the ball was such a line drive, how he assumed that it was just out.
Right. But anyhow, this isn't like Matt Stairs running the bases either. Yeah. Like, you got no excuse. Not to besmirch the great Matt Stairs.
But. So monitor, as Femi would say, monitor the Blue Jays price today.
Monitor that today. Yeah, Blue Jays and Yankees, that is the first game on the docket coming up 1:05 Eastern time. When we come back, exciting week for us here at VSiN. College Football Betting Guide is now out. We'll take a look into one of the many conferences previewed in the Big 12 when we return here on the Lombardi Line. Our 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Sign up today and receive both the College Football and NFL Betting Guide, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits. See all of our subscription options at VSiN.com/subscribe and pick the plan that works best for you. That is VSIN.com/subscribe. Back here on the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm. I'm Ben Wilson in for Femi. Tracking a lot today, whether it's Olympic action going on, Major League Baseball, or some college football. Speaking of that college football betting guide, we'll get into it right now before we talk some more NFL in hour number two. Excited to have Frank Schwab, by the way. He's our one guest today, Yahoo Sports betting analyst, and he will be on a panel here at Circa with
you. He headlines the panel.
He is the headliner of the panel. Maybe. I thought everybody was the headliner.
Well, maybe Willis McGahee. But anyhow.
Maybe Willis McGahee. You've had some really good guests over the years. Wasn't it Brian Urlacher last year?
2 years ago.
2 years ago?
Okay. Last year we had another NFL current employee, Dr. Eric Eager. Who's now working for the Carolina Panthers.
That's right.
He was on. Mike Somich was on the panel. Wes Reynolds was on the panel last year. Here's a trivia question. Who composed the original panel 6 years ago?
Oh.
Does anybody know? Anybody?
What, back at the Golden Gate?
This would have been at the... No, this was at the Detroit Ballroom at the D.
Okay.
I remember I had theme music play as each person came up. It was a production. What do you think?
Cade McNown.
6 years ago. 6 years ago.
Why was my first thought Cade McNown? I just thought random former Bears.
Try.
That's ludicrous.
When you hear footsteps, think horses, not zebras, Ben. Okay, try some more obvious picks.
Try some more obvious.
It was a VEASAN-centric lineup. A producer.
Krakenberger?
No, it was very scripted.
Brent?
Producer Brian Ortega was correct with his guess.
Gil Alexander
was one of the four panelists.
Wow, okay. Brady Cannon?
No. Brady Cannon. You have to eliminate Brady Cannon. He's tied to the Westgate. It's a bad guess.
That's right. That's
bad
right.
guess.
Yeah, sorry.
Jay Cornegie's agent, he doubles as.
I should guess that.
That's Mitch Moss, Gil Alexander, Matt Eumanns, and speaking of the college football betting guide, Paul Stone were the four panelists. I'm very proud I haven't repeated a panelist through the
season. So
24 different panelists. So.
Very good.
Yeah. Howard has never been on.
I'm going to put my hat in the ring. Hopefully, by 2035, that's my goal. Give myself like 11
You try
years.
To get yourself into an invitational first and then worry about the panel.
I thought I was
try
invited.
To make some
I just,
money.
I just wasn't.
I mean, JVT's angled his way in there. He's building a new house.
I wasn't in town, sadly.
Speaking of JVT, he and his wife were here last night. They were hanging out.
Okay.
Legacy Club.
Notes taken. Right. Yeah. Writing the stuff down. One of the conferences we'll talk about here, part of the College Football Betting Guide. All good things to know for the future. How about the Big 12 here, where we had a lot of disagreement as far as there were 16 of us on the betting guide who gave out predictions for all the conferences, and it should not be a surprise that there were a lot of different takes here on the Big 12 because this is a wide open conference. If we're being honest, Mike, I know Utah's favorite.
Utah's the most bet college football team at Circa.
Really?
Yes.
That surprises me.
Utah to win the Big 12. Utah to make the playoff. Not so much to win the national championship, but to make the playoff, win the Big 12 slash. Let me ask you this question before we get into the nitty-gritty of maybe several teams. Is the Big 12 a one-bid conference in the playoff? I think the ACC is, but is the Big 12?
I would say yes, largely because of the, there's a lot of variance here. A lot of teams who are in that, 7.5 to 9.5 win total range. You sort of feel like there will be a lot of attrition, a lot of infighting where you have lots of these teams kind of knock each other off. And it turns into a league where, somebody is going to emerge. You'll get the top two into the title game, but it's likely I see because of that a one bid league. I don't see this being a situation where you get, Utah, K-State, who are the two favorites, both just head and shoulders above the rest of that league.
You don't think you get a two-loss conference runner-up that can get into the playoff? I think teams will have three losses.
Yeah, the scenario, I guess, is if Utah goes into the conference title game with one loss and is really, really impressive and let's say is firmly in the top 10 and they lose, that would be the scenario. Yeah,
it's possible. Now, okay, do you believe Utah is the deserved favorite?
I do.
Do you believe they're worth a bet at 3-1?
No, I don't.
Who is the most likely team other than Utah to win the Big 12?
To me, it is Iowa State.
Oh, we are simpatico.
Really?
I thought you were going to say Kansas State.
No.
I think Iowa State has a huge upside.
That's 7.5 on the win total, worth a sprinkle. You can find them 10-1. But this is a team who had the second best defense in the Big 12 last year, behind only Texas, who's now in the SEC. Iowa State, most returning production of anybody in FBS.
And they went from the year before having lost
top five
and losing the most to be returning the most.
100%. Yeah. You look at the four teams, too, that were of the most returning production last year. Those teams won on average about 3.2, 3.3 games more than they had the previous year. Not to say Iowa State won seven games last year.
Is going to be
10-2 this year. I'm not saying that, but Iowa State at 7.5.
It's a very interesting early season game against Iowa. Cy-Hawk is really, and we're taking Iowa State money in that game. That's one of our preview games. And of course, I do the Iowa radio stuff, the podcast and all the hits. And, you know, they've been talking about that for 2 months already.
Right. Oh, a lot of hype for that. Well, and the question for Iowa State last year was offense, which they had none of early in the year. Really good defense.
None.
They throw a freshman quarterback in there, Rocco Becht. We were doing Live Bet Saturday shows and making fun of the Iowa State ineptitude many, many a week. But the reality is, toward the back end of the year, I mean, they developed Becht pretty well. Throws for over 400 yards in the bowl game last year. And for Matt Campbell as a head coach, you're getting him in a season where there's not a ton of hype because of the way this new-look Big 12 is on the surface. You know, Iowa State, talent-wise, is right up there with the team a couple years ago that was ranked top 10 in the preseason, yet nobody's really talking about the clones in that way. At best, they might barely sneak into the top 25 in a lot of the preseason rankings, but that is the team to me. If one of those teams in that 7.5, 8.5 win total ilk is going to emerge, to me, the Cyclones are the best bet to make that happen this year.
Brent is high on Texas. Brent likes Houston. Michael Lombardi is high on Texas Tech.
Red Raiders.
Yeah.
With Joey.
He's big on the high school coaches, I guess.
Well, I've heard, look, Joey McGuire has done a very good job coming into what was it, a tough situation at first in Lubbock, and has built that program back up to in a position where you're at least in kind of that dark horse league. But all I've really heard to make the case for Texas Tech is, well, Joey McGuire's an awesome coach, but I don't know that the roster really, really warrants
all the minutiae of all these players. Is that kicker, that place kicker, still there at Texas Tech, or did he graduate? He's a really good kicker.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. No.
Okay.
Texas Tech special teams, not the minutiae that I...
The one point about even like betting Iowa State over the 7.5.
Yeah.
Like there's the middle of that conference is so bunched up, right? Like they could still be really good and lose three conference games. You really have to hope if you're betting them over 7.5, they can win that Cy-Hawk game and have those three wins. And then they would only need to win five games in conference to get over 7.5.
Hopefully,
and there's a shot. There's a very real shot. I think that game's a toss up.
I agree.
And yet the Iowa people are talking playoff. I mean,
yeah,
I get it. A new look offense has got to be better than what they had. And you get McNamara back, which you didn't have last year. But is it enough? Is it enough? I don't know. I'm looking at these point spreads. Like these teams coming from the West Coast, other than Oregon, are not very highly regarded.
Correct.
Right? Washington lost even USC. It's these point spreads.
No love for UCLA.
No love for UCLA. They're in LA. But it'll be interesting. I think over time, though, the West Coast teams will do just fine there.
I agree. It's just a matter of adjustment. This will be a very tough
first year.
These
Big Ten people are like, oh, they can't play our style. They don't play defense. You lost to them every year in the Rose Bowl for 100 years.
Yeah.
Come on, I lived with it. We would go to a Rose Bowl party at Jerry Vossen's house in East Dubuque every year. I mean, growing up, you go and you pull for the Big Ten team, even if your team doesn't make it. We talk about Super Bowl parties. We always had Rose Bowl parties. And all those years as a kid growing up, and they would get beat, and they would come in, Ohio State, Michigan be top, and they'd lose out there. Iowa lost four times when they got there, right? I mean, it's just, it's
Wisconsin,
tough to stomach.
Wisconsin is the
exception. Yeah. They did very, Barry Alvarez Wisconsin. Was terrific as big dogs in those games.
Right.
Went out there and were able to run the football. And even when they lost, they played great games out there.
And then the TCU was sort of the one, like of all the years, that was the one bizarre one there for Wisconsin.
Very bizarre.
Gina Garcia back at kicker for Texas Tech.
Okay.
I thought he was back. I just wanted to confirm. He is back. Senior this year for Texas Tech. Really, really
That's
good
the
kicker.
Love. Joey McGuire and Garcia.
Outside of that, not really. That's a tough early trip, too. Texas Tech goes to Pullman for a Pac-2 game against Wazoo. 7.5 on that win total there for Texas Tech. We still have a whole lot more college football content in that guide. It's over 200 pages. A lot of great breakdowns there. Yeah, Brent Musburger likes the 200-1 shot. Houston in the Big 12.
Yeah.
So a lot of opinions on the Big 12 this year. We'll talk some NFL intra-division win totals when we come back as hour number two of the Lombardi Line gets underway next.